Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. We've had a few days to somber in our sadness. We did bow out on penalty shootouts. On penalties. See, my mind is still absolutely fried. To Manchester United at Wembley. Absolutely gutted. Let's see who we've got on the podcast today. Curtis, how are you?
Good. Very, very good. I'm glad to be here to talk about the game and to talk to you wonderful individuals. So yeah, let's do this.
As always, Curtis, as always. And we are welcomed. We are joined by Sony all the way from the US of A after 10 plus hour travel here. You must be absolutely knackered, Sony. How are you?
I want to go to bed.
Fair enough.
I am so done. It's been a day. It's been a day. But I'm just glad that I'm finally sitting down.
Fair enough. Well, you've come to the right podcast if you want to fall asleep. So you are so welcome. We will be your sleep therapy for today. We're not going to touch too much on the game itself. Let's talk about the emotions. Let's talk about the day. Because, Curtis, it was a really, really good day. You had a little bit of stress getting there. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, my coach sort of picked me up at about 11 a.m. and I was all prepared. And maybe about an hour and a half into our trip, there was a car accident, which held us up for about 2 hours in one place, which was fun. So we arrived about an hour before the game started, I think, in the end. So I didn't have time to, unfortunately, do any sort of interviews or, you know, do any of the sort of touristy things I'd like to have done. Regardless of that, it was still, you know, a really fantastic experience. I'd never been to Wembley before. And I've got to say, stepping out to that bowl, you know, was incredibly emotional. I actually sat down and I nearly cried. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, it was one of the biggest things I've ever seen in person. You know, I've never, you know, I live in the country, you know, I'm not used to these big city things. So to see all these people and you could feel all this love around you for this one thing. And it was one of these moments where your differences didn't matter. You know, we all come from different walks of life, but we're all here to support this one thing. And I truly felt it. And I was sat there you know, just trying to hold it in. And and these people around me just had so much passion. It was wonderful. Regardless of the result, it was a great day, I thought.
Yeah, I love that, Curtis, because as you say, you're all there for the same feeling. And I get a lot of anxiety when I go to places like this, massive crowds, and you don't know how people are going to be with you and stuff like that. And I had a group of lads sort of stood near me and I was like, oh, they're going to be rowdy. I'm not going to like this. But they were lovely. They were really, really nice and accommodating. And as you say, you're all there for the same reason. So there's no reason to be anxious. There's no reason to feel like you don't belong, because you're there for Brighton Hove Albion Football Club. And
I was sat next to a guy and his two sons, and okay. we all stood up during the pens, and we were all going, oh, we hate this. We hate this. This is horrible. Then I was like, here's some stickers, guys. I have a podcast. And I handed him out some stickers. He was like, thanks. I'll put that in my car. And then Solly missed the penalty directly afterwards.
We can all blame Curtis for handing out Albion Obsessed stickers. Yeah. The Albion Obsessed stickers are now
cursed. Solly saw the glint of the sticker. He was like, and then
I can't do this. Yeah, pretty much. No, there's no shame in the emotion of it as well, Curtis. You say, walking out and seeing that massive stadium bowl and seeing all the blue and white flags everywhere and everyone there sort of rallied around. And my dad, it was his first time seeing the Albion at the new Wembley. He didn't come to the semi-final 4 years ago. Now, when the team were walking out and Sussex by the Sea was being sung by the Albion fans, he had a massive tear, so many tears in his eyes and massive lump in his throat. And it was just such a moment to share that with him and to share that with my mum as well. And it's a massive family occasion. So these people, Curtis, saying that Wembley shouldn't holds the semi-finals and it shouldn't be held in high regard of being such a special day. What's your response to that? Because for me, these chances, yes, we've done it twice in 4 years, but they don't come around every season.
I think a lot of these cup games, I think you have to treat every one of them like a final. You know, you have to have that goal in mind to progress, to obviously win the whole thing. But I feel like it's a big occasion. You know, the FA Cup is a huge, huge thing, and I'm sure that's something you've learned, Sony. Like how big it is for, you know, the UK and how we treat it and stuff like that. But yeah, I my brother's the same. My brother doesn't think we should hold the semi-finals at Wembley, but I just think, you know, semi-finals, it's still a big thing, you know, so why not?
That'll be because he's a Reading fan and they'll never get that. I'm joking. No, sorry, Toby. Right. Sorry, Toby. I love you. I've never met you, but I love you. You're
he's
fine.
Somewhere just like,
He's fine. Let's talk about something a little bit more positive now, because Sony, you are in the UK. You are coming to your first Brighton game on Saturday, which is the Wolves game. That's the 29th, I want to say. Is it 29th? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
How excited are you to see the Albion, and where did your Albion journey start?
Yeah, so crazy enough, last summer my baseball team was doing pretty badly, like really, really bad. I believe we were on the verge of losing about 100 games, and I think we ended up losing about 107 by the very end. So I was getting fed up with it, and a couple of my coworkers were like, hey, you should totally watch like football. Watch the Premier League. It's there. And I'm like, I'll think about it. I'm not really my sort of thing. And then a guy that I was seeing got tickets to see Bayern Munich play against DC United in DC. And so he was like, hey, come with me. Like, we'll watch a game. And so I just kind of watched it. And I really did like the atmosphere. Like, just the whole sense of community and belonging, and like everybody like grabbing everyone else together. And it's like, hey, you know, we're going to cheer for this team and rah, rah, and all this cool stuff. You don't get that in baseball. Baseball is pretty much a silent game. And so it's long, it's silent, it gets a little bit grindy at times. And, you know, just having football kind of be there for me was actually pretty good in the very end. My first game that I watched was the Manchester United season opener, and I remember just going on Twitter and was like, okay, I'm just going to observe this purely from a baseball perspective. Let me see if I could align it with what I know and what I'm going to figure out eventually. And I ended up writing like this huge thread breaking down how like Brighton was over here scoring goals, like they were exposing the gaps, and like Manchester United supposed to be like this really big powerhouse and they're losing hardcore. And by the very end, I was like, you know what? This is the team that I should cheer for, because if my baseball team struggled that much, we won a World Series in 2019, but it took us like 5 or 6 years of losing in postseason. So like semifinals, like all that good stuff. Like we lost so much. Just seeing a team like willing to do that buildup, willing to get over there, do whatever it takes. And I saw that in Brighton, was like, you know what? This is my team. Like the people seem chill. You know, I like the beach. I know that's such like a very cliche kind of deal, but I really do like the beach and I really do like the colors of the shirt and all, but I like the people and I like the club. And I liked, you know, at the time Graham Potter was there and he was doing a pretty good job. And like, everybody was like, oh my gosh, he's so great. I'm like, okay, great. I'll just join. And I just remember like trying to find a Twitter community just to see, like connect with people and go, hey, this is a sport that I'm following. I'm adopting your team. Please don't be mad at me. And, you know, I went to bed and this was like 10 o'clock at night. I woke up the next morning to like 15 notifications on Twitter with everybody saying, hey, welcome. You're like, you picked a great club. Like I was getting follows like crazy, like people were talking to me, and it was so bizarre to just have that kind of feeling throughout the day at work. And I was constantly answering people like, hey, yeah, I'm still learning. Like, sorry, I'm not going to know everything. I'm not going to pronounce everything correctly. But ever since then, it's been so fun to watch just like the team kind of progress, and, you know, with the ups and downs, and even with the Wembley semifinal, which I watched in Canada. Like, they were Albion fans in the pub that I was in. And I wasn't expecting that. You know, there was like a bunch of Manchester United shirts, but then I saw like three or four or five of them just kind of like pop into the game. We're all just like cheering on, and I got my friends to cheer them on. I'm like, okay, great. See, this camaraderie. I love it. I love it. So yeah, that's kind of how I came to be like this big fan on Twitter, you know. Yeah. Like, again, I'm American and all, but I don't know. I feel like I could relate so much to you guys. So I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, 100%. And we've fully embraced on this podcast the American community that have started supporting the Albion. We've got Dagan on the podcast now, who I believe had the same starting point as you, was watching that the first game against Manchester United. And what always shocks me, and what always like not shocks, but what always like really impresses me, is your instant knowledge of it all. And like, that there's never any like gatekeeping amongst us as a podcast at all, and it's like we so embrace it, don't we, Curtis?
I think the more, you know, interesting, fun, loving, great people following this amazing club, then I think that's the better. You know, I'm so happy to have individuals like yourself that wanna support our club, because I just think that makes us better as a fan base. So.
Yeah, exactly that. And to think that the Albion are going to America this year in pre-season is fantastic for all of these people that have committed so much of their time and so much of their emotions to the club already. And to get to see them in person, like Sony, you're getting to see them luckily this weekend against Wolves at the Amex, which is going to be a fantastic experience for you, hopefully. But for them to go to where you guys are, I bet you're really excited for that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, as soon as they announced the Philadelphia date, I'm like 2 hours away from Philadelphia. I'm there. New York, 4 hours. I'm also there. I was definitely hoping, like, if I couldn't make this trip, I was hoping for them to just come to the U.S. because I want to see them play. I want to see, like, other Americans who love, you know, Brighton and Hove Albion to just kind of show up and, you know, meet new friends, meet new people. And I feel like we have been doing that a lot. I know that I hung out with some of the stateside Seagulls for my birthday in February. And so I got to meet Paul, who does really great work, by the way. Stellar guy, 10 out of 10. And then I got to talk to Dagan, because Dagan's in Virginia, so we're not too far off. And just like, we have like this huge WhatsApp group. And so we're all just talking about the club. And like, there's a lot of people on like the East Coast, but then there's some in like California, there's some in Chicago. There are so many people everywhere. And so I'm excited to see the team here. And then I'm excited to see everybody else just kind of merge onto the East Coast for like a week and just watch these teams battle it out for fun.
Yeah, 100%.
It's actually mad, Joe, that there's these little contingents of Brighton fans in the States. Like it's still crazy to me that's yeah. even a thing, you know? Like
fully blows my mind as you were talking there, Sonia. I'm honestly getting goosebumps, because it's like my little club are making waves in America, and we've got so many amazing people joining this community. And as you say, like, you know, woke up to 50 notifications, and that is what the Brighton community can do so well on Twitter. Of course, there's the toxic sides, but that always comes with social media. But to know that there is that community there for you is amazing. And I'm so glad that we can be so welcoming and to have you on the podcast as well. Really, really good. Let's talk a little bit about the team and about sort of, let's do some sort of generic fan questions, I guess. So out of the team at the moment, who would you say your favorite player is, if you can pick one? There's a lot to choose from, but.
I know there's a lot. I would like to say Mitoma, because I remember watching like the first time he was in a game. And I was really hoping that, like, at the time, Potter would just put him in the game. Like, dude, this guy can make an impact on the field. Just put him on. And then, like, he wouldn't put him on. And I know a lot of people on Twitter were disappointed. They're like, we just got this guy. Why is he, like, showing his stuff? And then one day he just threw him as, like, a substitute. And you could just see the immediate impact on the field. Just over here, just like passing plays and just going left, right, like confusing people. I'm like, that's the kind of stuff that we need, you know? That's like a huge driver in like scoring goals. Second place, if I had to pick a second place, would probably be Evan Ferguson. Definitely one of those guys that also made a huge impact on the field. And you can feel it when he's not on the field, you know? And so I'm really happy that he got a really long contract, which means he can develop and build. And I can't wait to see what else he's going to do.
Yeah, super happy about that. You give me the perfect segue, because today on the 20, we're recording this on the 25th of April. Evan Ferguson, about an hour and 40 minutes ago, just signed a bumper deal, taking him to up to 2028. I believe that there was a report as well of an extra year being added as a club option on the end of that, so possibly even 2029. I'm not sure if that fact is straight, so do correct me in the comments if you do know. But Curtis, how much of a boost is that going to be for the young Irish lad that, you know, he's come into the squad probably since December and done so well, and now he's got his bumper contract?
First things first, Manchester United, make sure you shut the door on your way out. But secondly, yeah, I'm just really, really happy. I mean, I've been hearing about it for a little while, you know, like rumours and stuff, and I was like, oh, I'll believe it when I see it, because, you know, you can never be too sure. But I was sort of relieved when I read that, that he's, you know, wants to commit his future to us. I think the sky's the limit for him. I really, really do. I'm just excited to see more of him. I really, really am, you know, because he's clearly very important. He's so clever. His IQ is, knows no bounds, you know. Yeah. So a fully fit Ferguson will be a killer, and I'm really excited to see it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the new kit next season with Ferguson number 9 on the back. Give him that number 9 shirt and he will bag us 20 goals next season. You heard it here first. So yeah, I'm mega excited, because as you say, Curtis, his potential is unreal, and where he is level wise now, even, he brings so much to the team. And you see, like, I'm not going to sit here and slate Danny Welbeck, but if Evan Ferguson was on the pitch at Wembley, he's a guy that comes deep and gets involved in the play and links up players, and he's that focal point all the way through the spine.
Yeah, he's just so big as well, the way he strides and stuff. He's like an elegant, you know, giraffe, the way he's just out there. So but I agree, you know, like, because we have Welbeck's very, very clever the way he does stuff, you know, but I'd say, you know, Ferguson has that athleticism about him, and he's more willing to do the work. Not saying that Welbeck isn't, because Welbeck, as I say, is a fantastic player. I think we give him a lot of the fan base gives him a lot of stick, but I'd say Ferguson is sort of a better option in that striker position than maybe Welbeck.
I would say so, but I think Ferguson's got a few more years on Danny.
Just a few.
In terms of athleticism and adapting to the current modern game, and what Danny gives us up front is amazing as well. So we can't take anything away from him. So yeah, I guess we can sort of talk a little bit about the emotions of the game on Sunday, Curtis, because it was a weird one, wasn't it? I don't know how you felt in the ground, but it was probably the most emotionally charged football game I've ever been to.
As I said, you know, I stepped out of my seat, because I was on the end of a row, and I was like on the aisle, and I was sort of stood there, just sort of like, I was like dancing or something, because I had to just sort of do something with my body, because I just couldn't stand still. I couldn't sit down because I couldn't see anything. So I was just like, okay, I audibly went, I'm not enjoying myself. This is not fun. You know, and the guy next to me, as I said, with his sons, was like, this isn't good. He said, I need a cigarette. and it just carried on. And then obviously when we missed the pen, you could just feel all the air just leave at that one point, you know. And we knew at that point, unfortunately, that was going to be it, you know, unless Sanchez could make some sort of wonder save, which unfortunately he didn't. But ultimately, like, after I got into the coach and stuff, I realized I just felt so much pride that we were where we are and we played the way we did, because let's not forget, like, that they couldn't beat us in normal time either, you know. And if we think about it, you know, both defences, both ends were fantastic. And the goalkeepers were fantastic. I think both Man United and Brighton were equally as good. I think maybe we had some of the better chances and whatnot, but it's about finishing said chances. But yeah, I just felt so much pride, a lot of sadness, of course, but just pride.
Yeah, 100%, Curtis. And that Matoma chance at the end, I don't know about you, where De Gea sort of got there before Matoma did. It keeps replaying in my mind because I think that was around the 118th minute, I want to say. So it was like really, really dead on.
I threw out my right shoulder celebrating that preemptively. I'm not even joking. I can't lift my arm up because I did like, I was like, yeah, oh, you know, that. I can't move my arm.
Oh no, that's not good. That is not good. Yeah, but like these tiny fine margins, like that was an
inch close to his foot. It was the Inciso shot for me, you know, when he shot it at De Gea, and De Gea just sort of like tipped it over. That one, I thought, from where we were, I thought that was going in. And there was like a side netting shot from Purvis, I think it was. Yeah. We all around us started cheering. We thought that went in at that point. No. And then it was like, oh no.
Yeah, I mean, I said to my dad before the game, I was saying, look, De Gea's had an absolute mare in the week against Sevilla. He's going to come to Wembley and he's going to put on a masterclass. And he was really, really good where he needed to be. And at the other end of the pitch, one guy I really, really want to highlight, Robert Sanchez. He's been out of the Premier League side for a good few games now. And Jason Steele has been doing really well in his place. But Steele got injured. Rob Sanchez has come in, taken his chance again. Sony, how do you view Roberto De Zerbi with the goalkeeper situation? What does he do now? Because Sanchez, for the last two games, in my opinion, has been completely undroppable. I don't think he can lose his space.
You can't say that he can't lose his space, you know, because it all depends on, like, as, you know, De Zerbi says, like, week over week, like, how people do in training, how they're able to like flex and do all this sorts of stuff. It's a really good 50-50 chance. Like with Sanchez's performance at Wembley, I can tell you right now, you know, there may be a chance where we will probably see him tomorrow. Definitely. I feel like he definitely deserves to be in that spot for tomorrow. Like, he absolutely deserved it because that guy was just over here knocking off like balls left and right. And I admit I got a little bit nervous and was like, yeah, I'm going to need another drink, please, because I can't do this right now. But no, he did a really good job blocking. I like both guys. I think that they both fit really great. I know like having Jason Steele come up and do his thing for a little bit definitely gave him like, you know, a little bit of that edge that he needed. And, you know, there were some moments where he could have played a little bit better. But at the end of the day, that's what De Zerbi wants. He wants people to get that exposure, to get those minutes, so that way they can perform better. And so he has a better pick of who he wants to put on the field for that time. But yeah, I mean, it's, again, 50-50 shot. Could be Steele, could be Sanchez. I believe that both of those guys deserve to play tomorrow.
Yeah, 100% spot on. As you rightly say, I don't think you can say for sure that they are. I don't think any player is undroppable. And a lot of people are talking about Solly March, Curtis, and obviously missing the penalty. He's played a lot of football. Does he sit out tomorrow? What would that do to his morale if he was dropped to the bench, Curtis? I think for me, Roberto De Zerbi's got a massive call to make there.
You don't drop him, in my opinion. He's going to want to make up for that, even though he doesn't have to, you know, at least not in my eyes anyway. You know, I think De Zerbi said even the best players in the world miss penalties, you know, and he's absolutely correct. You know, we can't all have perfect days. And he's going to bounce back from this. You know, he's arguably probably one of the players of the season for us so far. So we've all got to just get behind him from now on, because, like, you know, that's still going to be weighing pretty heavy on him. And it was horrible to see those pictures of him in tears. That was so hard to see. But as I said, we just got to get behind him as well as the rest of the squad, and we've got to support them and just see them over the line. And we've got to achieve Europe. We have to.
Yeah, 100%. We've got 9 games left, and it's so lucky that we've got a game coming up so quickly after a massive disappointment. And I always refer back to this, and Roberto De Zerbi does as well, so I will continue to do it. We lost to Charlton on penalties. We went on to, I think we won our next five games after that really disappointing moment. And Solly hit the biggest purple patch of his career and scored an absolute screamer against Southampton. So if that's anything to go by of what Roberto De Zerbi does, as I always call him, the mentality king, I think we've got a really exciting few games coming up. Well, and we've got a really good chance.
As I said, though, sometimes it takes these sorts of moments to, you know, really help you kick on and make you realise a lot about yourself and all this. So hopefully they take that pain and the anguish of that, and they can use that to see themselves over the line.
100%. And we've got a good chance to put things right against Manchester United in a few weeks' time. We play them, I think, on the 4th of May at our place. So what an opportunity for the boys to really put things right there. And I think they'll be well fired up for that. Let's talk a little bit then about predictions for the next two games. So tomorrow, absolutely huge, as I say. Sony, what are you thinking for? Do you normally do predictions? Because I'm going to press you for one for now.
I normally don't. I just say I take it as they come. We're definitely going to win tomorrow. Like, I'll probably say like maybe 2-0.
I like that. Nice positivity. You're joined by the two resident positive people on the podcast. I probably haven't been overly positive today because I'm the host and I'm playing devil's advocate, which is what Tom normally does. But yeah, I'm nice and positive about tomorrow. I think we will win 2-0 as well. I was talking to a Nottingham Forest fan earlier and I went with that prediction. Curtis, what do you think for tomorrow?
I mean, I'm positive about it as well. I think it will be a tricky game though, because Nottingham are currently, you know, fighting to stay in the league. So I feel like we have to give them, you know, a bit of respect there, that they're not going to be very, very easy to roll over. But saying that, I feel like we are going to win 3-1. That's my prediction.
Like that. And another team that we have to respect, Curtis, because I think they've sort of turned their form a little bit. Wolverhampton Wanderers, who we're playing on Saturday. Another really, really tough game against a team fighting for their lives. What do you think?
Another tricky one. Like I said, all these teams towards the bottom end of the table are just going to be fighting for every single point they can, you know. So we have to bear in mind that they're going to be very, very hungry, you know. I'm not making Wolves puns. That's just
hungry like a wolf.
Indeed. 2-0. In that game, 2-0.
Amazing. I like it. Positivity again. Sony, Wolves game, you'll be there in the North Stand, in amongst the rabble. What are you thinking?
I'm actually going to say 1-0 for that one.
That'll be much better than Curtis's first game at the Amex, which was a 0-0 board. No, we lost. We lost 2-0. Against Villa.
That's right. We lost 2-0. And then I saw the Newcastle game, which was a draw. And then I saw us beat Palace. No, I didn't see Norwich.
Yes, you did. That was 0-0 against Norwich. You were sat right next to me.
I don't even remember that one. See?
Oh, no.
Curtis had a great first ball. It took Curtis three games, I think, to see a goal.
Palace that we won, which was amazing. What a game that was. Sat next to your lovely mother throughout the entire thing.
It's because you were sat in my seat, Curtis. That's just what happens. I mean, when I used to sit in the southwest corner, which is near the away fans, Sony. So it would be opposite from where you're sat on Saturday. And I moved to the North Stand midway through last season. And when I joined the North Stand, we didn't win for like 8 games. And I thought I was the curse. But luckily, we started picking up again. So, fingers crossed that your first Amex experience is a really, really positive day. So what sort of time are you getting up there? Because obviously we're going to want to meet you and say hello and welcome you to the Amex.
I will be there practically from like the crack of dawn. Like, I'm starting very early. So if anybody wants to say hi, feel free.
Love that. Absolutely love it. As I say, we love the fact that there's so many Americans that come over and embrace our little football club that are doing so well in the best league in the world, which still blows my mind. And we've got 9 games to secure a European spot. Of course, with the final going to Manchester United and Man City, I believe an extra European spot is given to the league. So it's extended to 7th. I don't know how it works out if West Ham won the Europa Conference League. I'm not sure what happens there because obviously they're right down the bottom of the table. So if anyone does know, do let us know because I really want that extra European spot in the league. But yeah, we've, as I say, 9 games to go. Lots more content to come your way. We'll be reacting to every game here on out. And fingers crossed that we're all nice and positive at the end of the season, Curtis.
I mean, as per usual, I say it all the time, but thank you to everyone who watches, leaves lovely comments and has positive feedback. As per usual, we wouldn't do it without you. So thank you for being you. And let's see out the season. Let's do this. We've got this. I know we can. We can make Europe.
There you go. Any final words, Sony, before we sign off?
I'm excited either way. Like, I'm excited to see win, lose, draw, whatever. Like, I'm thrilled to meet everybody. I'm thrilled to be there. I'm just thrilled to be in the country in general. So once I get some sleep into my system, I'm ready. We're good to go.
Amazing. We're going to let you go and sleep and rest. You deserve it. We'll see you at the Amex on Saturday. For everyone watching and listening, do forget to like. But don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
Also, keep it real, Joe.
Keep it real. Find a river. Do whatever Tom does. Be a vegan. It's great. Sorry, Tom. we will see you on the next podcast. I'm not going to do Tom's outro because I always bugger it up. So, bye.